Take your Bibles tonight, if you would. Luke chapter 23. We finished up chapter 22 last week, talking about Jesus on trial before the Sanhedrin. They found him guilty. They accused him of being the Son of God. And he said, well, that I am. And claiming to be the Son of God was blasphemy. In that day, the Jews, the Sanhedrin didn't realize that he truly was the Son of God. They thought he was a man claiming to be the Son of God. And so they pronounced the penalty that was ascribed by their law on this one that equated himself with God. And that penalty was death. And the last they said, in verse 71 of chapter 22, what need we any further witnesses? For we ourselves had heard of his own mouth. And again, they passed the verdict. They passed the put him under the penalty of death. Now look at verse 1 of chapter 23. And the whole multitude of them arose and led him unto Pilate. So when it says the whole multitude, it means everybody that was there. It means the whole Sanhedrin, which consisted of 70 rulers. They each probably had an assistant or staff. The high priests were part of it. And everybody there, so it could have been close to 100 people, took Jesus to Pilate. Now, the reason they had to take him to Pilate was that the Sanhedrin, under the Roman rule, remember, they were captive under, they were under Rome at this time, and the Romans gave the Jews, the Sanhedrin, that ruling body, the ability to rule in civil cases, in other words, one person against another, or religious cases. But the Romans retained for themselves capital punishment. They retained for themselves the ability to put somebody to death. And so even though the Sanhedrin had found Jesus guilty of blasphemy, even though they had passed the verdict and said, hey, you deserve to die, they could not carry out that punishment themselves. They had to take him to the Romans. They had to take him to the Roman governor, Pilate. Now, I want to set the stage for you. I want you to understand Pilate's history with the Jews, so you'll understand a little bit more why he handled this particular situation the way he did. Pilate was what they called the procurator in Judea. He held that post for 10 years, from 26 AD to 36 AD. There was another procurator in what was known as Samaria. Okay, remember, even when the Jews were in control, the kingdoms were split into two, the northern kingdom, Samaria, the southern kingdom, Judea. Well, when the Romans took over, they kept that division, and they had a governor or a procurator under each or over each of those areas. Now, they both reported to a leader that was over the area that the Romans called Syria, which included Judea and Samaria and some other areas. And that was the person that was that ruled over that area of Syria, which included both Judea and Samaria, was called a propraetor. And so both Pilate and whoever was over Samaria reported to this guy that was over Syria. And again, the Roman Empire was divided into provinces. If it was a peaceable province, it was ruled by a man or by a man called a proconsul. The proconsuls were under the rule of the Roman Senate. But if you weren't a peaceable province, in other words, if you were always rising up in rebellion, causing trouble for the Romans, which required that they kept more troops in your area, and that was what Syria was, and Judea was a big reason for that, because the Jews were always they stifled under Roman rule, and they were always causing trouble for the Romans. And so again, the province that included Syria and Judea and Samaria was ruled by this protractor, and he didn't report to the Roman Senate. He reported to the Roman emperor. Okay? And again, Judea and Samaria fell under the province of Syria. And so Pilate reported to a guy, which reported to the emperor. Okay? So just keep that reporting structure in mind as we talk a little bit about Pilate. Now, Pilate did not get along with the Jews from the very beginning of his rule in Judea. Let me just give you a couple of examples. Again, I'm just trying to set the scene so you'll understand the history that Pilate comes with as Jesus is brought before him. Shortly after he took office, okay, in AD 26, he set up winter quarters for his soldiers in Jerusalem. Now, his soldiers carried shields, and they also had banners that they put up in their camp that had the image of Caesar on them. The Jews, when they saw that, they saw the image of Caesar as a graven image, okay? And that was against, of course, one of the commandments. So they sent a delegation to Pilate. Now, Pilate most of the time lived in Caesarea. Caesarea was a town on the Mediterranean. It was, you know, it was a lot cooler there. And so Pilate most of the time had a residence in Caesarea. So when he set up this winter quarters for his troops in Jerusalem, they sent a delegation of Jews to Pilate to speak to him about the issue that they were displaying graven images in Jerusalem. Well, the negotiations didn't go very well, and it turned into a violent demonstration, so violent, in fact, that Pilate finally, in order to stop the violence, had the troops removed from Jerusalem, and they took their banners and their shields with them. Later in his rule, he put shields bearing the image of not just Caesar, but of some other pagan gods on the walls of Herod's palace in Jerusalem. Again, there was violent protest. This time, Pilate said, so what? If they want to protest, if they want to rise up, let them. Well, it got so violent that the Jews sent a delegation, not to Pilate, not to his boss, the guy that ruled over Syria. They sent a delegation to the Roman emperor. And the Roman emperor, so get the picture, they went over Pilate's head. They not only went over his head, they went over his boss's head and went to the top guy. I mean, you can't get any higher than Caesar. And the order came down from Caesar to Pilate, take the shields off the walls of Herod's temple. Now again, didn't make Pilate happy. Probably didn't make his boss happy, the guy that was in charge of Syria. But when the emperor spoke, you didn't ask any questions, you just obeyed. And so Pilate, again, because the Jews, who he was supposed to be in charge of, who he was supposed to rule, they went over his head to Caesar, and Caesar said, take those shields down. On another occasion, Pilate used the money that was given in the temple. Now, he wanted to use it for a pretty good reason. He built an aqueduct trying to improve the water supply in Jerusalem. Of course, the Jews thought that he was robbing money from God because the money they brought to the temple were their tithes and offerings to God. And that resulted in a riot that lasted 4 days. And Pilate's soldiers killed hundreds of rioters as well as innocent bystanders. And again, most Bible scholars think that Luke chapter 13, verse 1, and let me just read that verse to you. You don't need to turn back to it. But it talks about, it says, there were present at that season some that told him of the Galileans whose blood Pilate had mingled with their sacrifices. Probably referring back to this event where he stole the money from the treasury, a riot ensued, and hundreds of rioters were killed. That Luke chapter 13 probably refers to that event. Now, there were other abuses of power that Pilate exercised while he ruled. And at that moment in time, at this moment in time, when the Jews brought Jesus to him, he was afraid that if he didn't do what they wanted to do, they would go over his head again to the emperor. Now, again, he did not want that to happen. I mean, it's like, you know, you that work, you know that, you know, if you're in charge of some people and they don't like your decision and they appeal to your boss or to your boss's boss and your boss or your boss's boss agrees with them, it sort of undermines your authority. Now, you can probably get by with that once or twice, but if it's a continual thing, pretty soon you'll probably be removed from your position. And that's the way Pilate felt. I mean, if the Jews kept going back to the emperor and the emperor kept overriding Pilate, he would probably lose his position. So when they brought Jesus before Pilate, he was sort of standing on eggshells. He did not want to cross the Jews because of what had happened in the past and what they might do if he didn't agree with them. So here's the scene. You have Pilate, the Roman governor. Jesus stood before him. So you got the God of the universe, the God that created the universe, standing before the representative of the most powerful nation on earth at that particular time. Pilate probably thought that Jesus was on trial before him. But in all actuality, Pilate was on trial before Jesus and on trial before history. Because all of history, everybody that came after Pilate is going to know what Pilate did at this particular moment. Again, so he normally lived in Caesarea. He was in Jerusalem on this occasion, and he only came to Jerusalem when he had to, when his duty demanded that he do it. And Passover was a time when his duty demanded that he be in Jerusalem. At Passover time, the revolutionary spirit of the Jews rose. Now remember, Passover was the time they celebrated their deliverance from Egypt, coming out of captivity in Egypt. And the Romans thought, and many of the Jews thought, in fact, many of the Jews were looking for Jesus at Passover time to declare his kingship and set up his earthly kingdom and overthrow Rome. Well, the Romans were fearful because it was the Passover, and because, you know, the Jews got freedom from Egypt at Passover time. That Passover time might be an ideal time for them to rise up and revolt against the Romans. And so they had extra soldiers in Jerusalem at Passover time. And again, a lot of people came to Jerusalem, so the city was more crowded than it normally was. They had more soldiers there at Passover time, and so Pilate was there. And when he was in Jerusalem, he stayed at Herod's palace. Now, Herod was the Jewish king, but Pilate sort of took over the palace when he came to town. And it was in all probability at Herod's palace where they brought Jesus to stand before Pilate. It was early in the morning. Remember, they had their first, the Sanhedrin had their first trial in the middle of the night, which was illegal, so they had to redo it early the next morning after the sun was up. So immediately after that trial early in the morning, they brought Jesus before Pilate, again, to get his okay for them to carry out, or to get the Romans to carry out the execution of Jesus. So look at verse 2. And they began to accuse him, saying, "We found this fellow perverting the nation and forbidding to give tribute to Caesar, saying that he himself is Christ, a king." Christ, a king. So, again, the whole Sanhedrin's there. Again, probably close to 100 people. they stand before Pilate with Jesus, and they begin to accuse him of three different things that verse mentioned. They accuse him of sedition, trying to lead a revolution. They accuse him of forbidding the people to pay tribute to Caesar. Both of those were lies. That did not come up at his trial before the Sanhedrin. Again, the Sanhedrin was trying to appeal to Pilate and give him some reasons. And again, if you were a Roman leader, the two things that you were responsible for the most was keeping the peace and collecting taxes. Okay? Keeping the peace and collecting taxes. And so when the Sanhedrin brought Jesus before Pilate, the first two things they accused him of got at the very basic duties that the Roman leader was responsible for. This guy's trying to stir up trouble and disturb the peace, and he's forbidding people to pay tribute to Caesar. And then they said, the third claim, it was he claims to be Christ, a king. Okay? Again, first two charges were lies. The third charge was a perversion of what Jesus claimed to be. And look at verse 3. And Pilate asked him, saying, "Art thou the king of the Jews?" Now listen, the Jews didn't say the king of the Jews. They said Christ, a king. And Pilate asked him, saying, "Art thou the king of the Jews?" And he answered him and said, "Thou sayest it." So Pilate saw through what the Jews were trying to do. But again, in order to appease them, at least to pretend that he was interested in what they were talking about, he said, "Okay, you know, I'm going to question Jesus on this third charge." He ignored the first two. And so he asked Jesus, are you indeed the king of the Jews?" And again, the question that he used begged an answer in the affirmative. And so Jesus, again, not saying it directly, but implying that it was true, he says, "Well, thou sayest it. You say I'm the king of the Jews." Verse 4, "Then said Pilate to the chief priest and to the people, I find no fault in this man." Now, notice that chief priests are pluralized. So both Caiaphas, who was the current chief priest, and Annas, the former chief priest, Caiaphas' father-in-law, both of them were there. And so Pilate talked to the chief priest, he talked to the Sanhedrin, he talked to all the people there, said, "I find no fault in this man." Basically what he was saying is, okay, I've listened to the charges, I'm finding him not guilty. I find no fault in him. The matter should have ended there. The trial before Pilate should have been over. Look at verse 5. "And they were the more fierce, saying, He stirreth up the people, teaching them throughout all Jewry, beginning from Galilee to this place." And so the accusers, the Sanhedrin, they were upset. When Pilate said, "I find no fault in this man," they thought, he's not going to find him guilty. He's not going to carry out the execution, which made them angry. And they became a mob, if they weren't already. They began to accuse him, and they said, "Look, this guy's stirring up people all over our country. He started in Galilee, and he's brought it to Jerusalem, but he's stirring people up." Verse 6, "And when Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked whether the man were a Galilean." So he said, he stirred up the people from Galilee to Jerusalem. Is Jesus from Galilee? Is he a Galilean? He wanted out of this situation. He didn't want to do what the Jews wanted him to do, and yet he did not want to cross them because he didn't want them going to Caesar about him again. So he said, "Hey, is he from Galilee? Well, Herod is here in Jerusalem. Herod, the Jewish king, has authority over Galilee. I'll just send him to Herod." So in verse 7, "And as soon as he knew that he belonged unto Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who himself was also at Jerusalem at that time." So Pilate said, "Here's a way out. I don't have to decide anything. He's from Galilee. He's under Herod's jurisdiction. I'll just send him to Herod and let Herod decide what to do with him." Now, verse 8, "And when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceeding glad, for he was desirous to see him of a long season, because he had heard many things of him, and he hoped to have seen some miracle done by him. Now, remember, at one time, Herod thought Jesus was John the Baptist, who he had beheaded at his stepdaughter's request. Was John the Baptist come back to life? That's what Herod thought Jesus was. Well, he'd gotten over that, and he'd heard a lot of things about Jesus, especially the miracles, but he never met him. He'd never gone to see him. He probably thought it was beneath him. And so when Jesus was brought before him, he was happy. He was glad. He said, "Oh, now I'll get to see a miracle. I'll get to see Jesus do some of these things that I've heard that he has done." Look at verse 9. Then he questioned with him in many words, but he answered him nothing. So when Jesus came before Herod, Herod kept asking him questions. Now, we're not told what the questions were. We're not told what Herod was trying to get out of him. But with many words, in other words, many questions, he interrogated Jesus. Well, the questions must not have meant much to Jesus, because he just stood there silent, like a lamb before his shearers. He stood there silent. He just maintained a dignified silence before Herod. Verse 10, and the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. Now, they had followed Jesus to Herod. They stood there and listened as Herod questioned him. And when Jesus said nothing, when Jesus just remained silent, the crowd was incensed. And so, like they had done before Pilate, they began to accuse him of all the things that they had accused Jesus of. They repeated their accusations. They wanted their way. They wanted the execution to take place. Jesus, in their eyes, was guilty of blasphemy. He deserved to die. They did not have the authority to do that. They brought him to Pilate. Pilate had pushed him off on Herod. Here Herod had questioned him, and Jesus had said nothing. Their anger was boiling, and they began to accuse him louder and louder and louder before Herod. Look at verse 11. And Herod, with his men of war, set him at naught and mocked him, and arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him again to Pilate. Now, that phrase, set him at naught, means exactly what it says. They counted Jesus as nothing, as zero. They treated him with contempt. They mocked him. They mocked his claim to being a king. They mocked any authority that he had. I mean, the crowning act of their mockery was taking a gorgeous robe worn by kings, maybe one of Herod's old robes, and draping that on Christ, and then they sent him back to Pilate. Now notice, Herod rendered no judgment. He didn't find Jesus guilty. He did not find him innocent. In fact, the whole thing to Herod was just a game. It was like he was at a circus, and Jesus was a performer, and the performer didn't perform. He just stood there silently. And so Herod said, okay, if he won't provide me entertainment, I'll just get some myself. And he called the soldiers, and again, they treated Jesus with utter disrespect. I mean, this was the only time that Herod was going to be before Christ. The only time. And they treated him with great disrespect. They mocked him. They put this robe on him, and they sent him back to Pilate. Now look at verse 12. And the same day, Pilate and Herod were made friends together, for before they were at enmity between themselves. Now they were probably at enmity between themselves because of the event we talked about earlier, where Pilate stole money from the Jewish treasury, the temple treasury. And there were riots, and Pilate killed many of the riots who were from Galilee, rioters who were from many from Galilee, again, subjects of King Herod. And so, you know, they were at enmity, which means they didn't get along. They weren't friends because of that event. But as a result of this action, the Bible says they were made friends together. Now, you might ask why they were made friends together. Well, Pilate had no real power. He was the king of the Jews, but they were under Roman rule, and he had no real power. And so when the Roman governor sort of recognized his authority and sent Jesus to him, it pleased Herod. He said, here's the Roman governor recognizing my authority over my subjects. Jesus was one of his subjects. And so the Bible says that they were made friends. Now, Pilate did not send Jesus to Herod because he recognized his authority. I mean, Pilate was a puppet king as far as, I mean, Herod was a puppet king as far as Pilate was concerned. He didn't put any stock in Herod's authority. He was trying to get out of a sticky situation and thought Herod would help him, but Herod did not help him. He just made it worse because, you know, the Jews got madder when Herod questioned Jesus, and Jesus said nothing. And when Herod sent him back to Pilate, they were more upset than when they left. They were more determined than when they left to get Pilate to do what they wanted him to do, and they were ready to do just about anything to get Pilate to say, yes, he's guilty, he deserves to die, take him and crucify. Now, again, we're going to stop here for the night, but we know the rest of the story. Pilate examined him again, found him innocent again, guilty of nothing, but then washed his hands. Said, I'm not going to be guilty of this man's death. You take him and crucified. And the whole world, all of history since that moment, knows what Pilate did. Everybody. We all do. He had an opportunity to do right, and yet he bowed to the pressure of the crowd. Again, they'd gone over his head. He didn't want to get in bad with his boss's boss. He didn't want to get in bad with Caesar. He should have thought more about his standing before God than he did before Caesar. But he didn't. So we'll stop there tonight. Thank you for being here. Let's stand. We'll have a word of prayer and be dismissed.